these things are going to cause problems for you, Timothy, for the world in general, he says. But mark this, realize this, that in the last days, difficult times will come. For men will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boastful, arrogant, revilers, disobedient to parents, ungrateful, unholy, unloving, irreconcilable, malicious gossips, without self-control, brutal, haters of good, he says, treacherous, reckless, conceited, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. And like I said last time, just when you think that it's the godless world that's doing this, it's the fake godly people actually that are the cause. Notice, holding to a form of godliness, which is always a reference in the New Testament to Christianity, although they have denied its power, avoid such men as these, he says to Timothy. He gives us this huge list. Last time we began with the first one in the list, which may be to some surprise because it's such a mantra in our schools, in our society, that we must learn to love ourselves. And the Bible says the exact opposite every single time. The problem is that we do have a self-esteem problem. We esteem ourselves too highly. That's the bottom line. It is the precipitating factor, honestly, of the rest of this list. Because we love ourselves, because men love themselves, and there's no indication anywhere in the Scriptures that there's anything less than that, even as we saw, those with so-called low self-esteem are simply self-focused. Even those who kill themselves, they kill themselves because they love themselves so much, they hate to see themselves go down the toilet, and so they just end their lives in return. But lovers of themselves, and the second thing on the list is lovers of money. Now, this, of course, is Paul's second letter to Timothy. It's also his second time to speak of this whole issue of the love of money and the problems of it. In fact, I think it would be wise of us to consider what he's already said to Timothy with regards to the love of money in his previous letter. Let's take a look at it. It says there in chapter 6, verse 10, "For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil." That's the reason why it makes this list, among other things. It causes so much evil. Notice, not money. Money's an inanimate object. The fact that people love money, though, creates all kinds of evil circumstances and situations. And again, thus the reason why it makes the list. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm not in favor of one more sermon on money. It's not my favorite topic. One of my more favorite topics was last week. You should have been here. But this week, we're looking at money. I don't want to go there, but I didn't write this stuff. And I did commit us to a process in which we would go through verse by verse, line by line. And so we are at the place of money again. Again, I didn't write this. So what are we going to do? Skip it? No. That's too obvious. We're not going to skip it. We're going to look at it. We're going to consider it. So if you're ready, fasten your seatbelts. We're going to hear another sermon on money. I realize the church in general has a credibility problem when it comes to money. Many reasons. Primarily because you turn on the television and everything that looks like church or is called church, the people are asking for money. God will bless you if you give money. God will add more money to your money if you'll give money, which to a certain degree is true about those things, but they preach nothing else. Absolutely nothing else. No gospel, no missions, no anything. The whole Bible is concerned with lots of things. The Bible has a lot to say about money, and you can't argue that, but should it be the focus of everything that we do? Absolutely not. Nonetheless, when we come across money in the Scriptures, we shouldn't skip over it. We need to listen to it. Jesus had more to say about money than he did almost about any other subject. He spoke more about money than he spoke about heaven. Surprisingly so. Reminds me of a mother who in the back room of their house realized that her little Jimmy had swallowed a quarter. And so she screams up to the front of the house to her husband, "Call the doctor!" And he says, "What's the matter?" "Well, little Jimmy swallowed a quarter." So he picks up a phone and starts dialing, and she hears him up there talking, and it sounds like he's not talking to the doctor. It sounds like he's talking to their minister. So she screams up there and says, "Who are you talking to, honey?" And he puts his hand on the phone, "I'm talking to Pastor Bob." She said, "Why are you talking to Pastor Bob? We need medical attention at this point." He said, "Honey, you know Pastor Bob can get money out of anybody. Money has a powerful effect on us, because our tendency to love ourselves is so strong. And money affords us the opportunity to please self. It brings out the most basic tendencies in us. Another story of a man by the name of Stump and his wife Martha, who were farmers. And every year they would go to the state fair. Every year there was a guy at the state fair who was peddling rides in his biplane, $10 a piece. You can go up in this biplane, he takes you on this nice, you know, circular trip around the fairgrounds, around town, and he'll land you back $10 a piece. And so every year he would say to Martha, "Boy, I sure would like to fly in that plane. But it's $10. She said, "That's right, Stump. $10 is $10, and you're not getting in that plane." So they'd go home. Next year they come back. They're the same guy, same biplane. Same offer, $10, you know, go up in the biplane. And so Stump would say, "Boy, I would sure love to fly in that plane." Martha would say, "Every year, $10 is $10, Stump. Can't fly in that plane." One year, a number of years going through this process, Stump was over talking to the owner of the biplane, telling him their situation, tell him how much $10 meant to them as farmers and all this, that. So the owner of the biplane said to him, "I'll make you a deal." He says, "I'll take you and your wife up in the plane for free if you can ride the entire trip and not make a single sound. You can fly, I can take you through all the things that I'm going to do, and I don't hear a single word or a single sound of you, but every sound you make, if you do, every word you speak, if you do, will cost you $10. So it may be that you end this trip costing a whole lot more money than what I'm actually going to charge." But he says, "If you'll take the chance," he says, "I'll take you up for free." And so Stump turns to Martha. They both decide they can do it. They both get in the plane. He takes them up. He does all kinds of flips. He does dives. He does barrel rolls. He does everything in his repertoire of things that he can possibly do. Not a single sound from the compartment behind him. Not a single sound. Lands the plane, taxis it to a stop, yells over his shoulder, "Boy, I tell you, Mr. Stump, I can't believe how good you and your wife are. You amaze me. I thought for sure I'd be able to get a yell out of you when some way or another, no matter what I did." And he says, "I'm just impressed." He says, "You deserve a free trip." And Stump yelled back over the sound of the engine, "Yeah, it was real tempting to say something when Martha fell out, but $10 is $10. Money has a powerful effect on people. Because of our selfish nature. The love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. In their book, The Day America Told the Truth, authors James Patterson and Peter Kim reveal some very shocking statistics with regards to what people will do here in America for money. When asked the question, "What would a person do, what would they do for $10 million?" the people surveyed gave some amazing answers. Here are some of them. 25% of those asked said that they would abandon their entire family for that amount. Just leave them, never look back. 25%, one quarter of those asked. 23% said that they would sell their bodies as prostitutes for a week for $10 million. They'd be willing to do it. 16% said that they would give up their American citizenship. 10% said that they would let a murderer go free by withholding information. They would essentially lie or not say anything. 7% said that they would commit murder against a stranger. 3% said that they would sell their children or give them up for adoption. That's some atrocities, isn't it? People do, and that's just a small list, people do far more for far less. They do because they love money. They love it. They have to have it. They'll forsake family, they'll forsake friends, they'll commit crimes, they'll do horrible things, all for the sake of money. The love of money can lead us to do evil things, even mess up the most important relationship a person can have on this planet. Remember this verse? What Jesus said? No one can serve two masters. No one. I don't care who you are. Either he will hate the one and love the other. Notice the characteristics here, the extremes that he gives us here. Of course, he's talking about relationship, either your relationship with money, the masters or options are money and God here. But notice, where do you stand? As I look at this, I had to ask myself the question, where do I stand in this spectrum? Either I hate the one or I love the other. Notice he doesn't give us any middle ground there, does he? He doesn't say, he doesn't give us 1 through 5, sort of do, kind of do, really do, mostly do, all the way, or whatever. He gives us only two options, two extremes. Either he will hate the one and love the other, which do you love? And that way you know which one you hate. Or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other, which one do you despise? Which one are you devoted to because you despise the other? You cannot serve, Jesus says, both God and money. Very strong words. Those who would question that say, well, you know, there's no way. I mean, money doesn't send you to that kind of extreme. Forget the fact that Judas sold the Son of God down the river for 30 pieces of silver. People do it. Jesus wasn't lying. He knew exactly what he was talking about. And we're not exceptions to this. Where do you fall? It's a good question to ask yourself. We come to this subject of money. Love of money is the cause of so much evil in our world today. I mean, just read the headlines, the recent news. You have, for instance, the Madoff Ponzi scheme, destroying all kinds of people's lives. Love of money. Why were they invested with him? Because they loved money, in many cases. We're embroiled in a struggle over health care. What's the bottom line about health care in the United States? Why are we in this position? Because we love money. Doctors love money, and so they charge higher prices. People love money. They sue doctors, and we're in this constant, we're headed to this pinnacle in which we're not going to all fall off of it. All because of the love of money. You've got Enron problem several years back. Motor companies, which are collapsing. We got drug cartels across the river that are killing 4 to 5 people in Matamoros a day, selling thousands, hundreds of thousands of pounds of illegal substances here in the United States, shipping it over here, destroying lives, knowing that they're doing it, not caring the least a bit about a human life or anyone else. Abducting people, selling people for ransom, all for what? For money. They just want more of it. That's all they want. Horrible atrocities for the sake of money. Pretty much, if you want to solve a crime, you simply do what they say. Follow the money. There's a crime been committed. There's a murder been committed. Who benefits financially from this murder? Ask that question, and you will most likely find one, at least, or if not all, the sources of the reason why this person died or the reason why this crime was committed. The love of money. The love of money. Money can do lots of things for us, but it can't make us happy. Money can buy a bed. Can't buy you sleep. Money can buy you amusements, but it can't buy you happiness. Money can buy you companions, but it can't buy you friends. Money can buy you books, but it can't buy our brains. Money can buy a house, but it can't buy a home. Money can buy medicine, but it cannot buy health. Money can buy flattery, but it can't buy respect. Money can do a lot of things, but it can't make you happy. But you know what? It's not like Jesus said up there, there's this huge dichotomy between my relationship with God and my relationship with money. Either I'm devoted to the one or I love the one and I despise and hate the other. And so we get this extreme idea in among Christians that say, well, we just need to not have any of it. And maybe in some cases you shouldn't. Maybe if your addiction to it is so strong, your problem with it, your inability to handle it is so much that you just simply can't have it, well, then that's what I would recommend. Don't have it. Don't have it, because eternity is at stake for you. Eternity matters. What you're going to get as rewards as a Christian for the way you've handled your life and handled your money, among other things, is going to be significant. It's going to matter forever and ever. So you need to make your decisions based upon that. But is it possible for us to have money and yet still be happy? Can I have lots of money and not be devoted to it, not love it? Is it possible for me to manage and have assets that accumulate in the millions in some cases, and not have a love for it, still be happy with it? We say, well, there's just no possibility because the Scripture doesn't allow it. Actually, the Scripture does. It really does. The Bible actually gives us a recipe, and the only recipe there is, to take the stuff that is used and fought over and loved to our own destruction and turn it into something that can bring fulfillment. How can I have money and be happy at the same time? Well, the Bible actually tells me how I can do that, and I want us to look at that. Paul's previous letter to Timothy this morning, we're going to look at what he had to say to Timothy with regards to money. We skipped over it in our last study of the book of 1 Timothy because we were in a different thing. We looked at money, but we didn't look at these verses, and so we're going to go back and take a look at them. Here we have a recipe by which I can live with money and still be happy. I can have tons of money at the same time be totally Christian and totally everything God wants me to be. How can I do that? How can I have money and be happy at the same time? Well, here's the recipe. Notice what Paul says here. Command those, it's very strong language he uses to Timothy here. Command those, he says, who are rich in this present world, not to be arrogant nor put their hope in wealth. Now let's stop right there for just a second, because we may get off the ship here and say, well, I'm not among the rich. You know, I do have a little money, but I certainly don't fall under the category of rich. Here's an informative site that I want to give you on the web. Here's a place where I want you to go. Not right now. If you've got a phone, don't go there. GlobalRichList.com. GlobalRichList.com. All one word. Global Rich List. This is a list that basically accumulates and compiles all the information of all the wage earners on our planet, the billions of people who are earning money today. And it ranks you based upon your annual income. It ranks you as to where you are in the global scheme of things as far as wealth is concerned. Some very informative things. For instance, you go in there and there's a little place where it says, type in your annual income. If you type in, for instance, as I did, $30,000 as an example, type in $30,000, guess where you rank globally as far as income? You're in the top 7% of wage earners in the world. 93% of people, wage earners in the world, make less than you do. 93%. If all you take home is $30,000 US, that's amazing. It goes up from there. If you make $40,000 a year, you're in the top 3%. 97% of people in the world make less than you do. And guess what? If you make $50,000, you're in the less than 1 percentile of all the wage earners in the world. So, with that little example, are we rich? Well, yeah, we are. Now that I'm speaking to rich people, let's continue. Command those who are rich in this present world. Notice command. So consider yourself commanded. Command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant. Can you do that? Nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. So the first thing we can do, since we are rich, to make sure that since we have money, we can have money and be happy at the same time, it not control our lives, it not be our focus, it not be the thing that we love, but instead we love God, even though we have this tempting substance in our possession, in our bank accounts, that we're accumulating wealth with and growing and planning to do things with. How do we keep it from controlling us because of our sinful nature? Well, here's how we stop the love of money and its consequences from wrecking our life. Number one, Paul says here, in verse 17, put your hope in God. Put your hope in God. Now, that may seem like a no-brainer. And if that is so, there is a whole lot of people with no brains, because there's a lot of Christians who don't do that. It's very simple. It's very Sunday school, first grade, kindergarten. We tell our little kids, put your hope in God. Don't hope in anything else. Everything else is ephemeral. It's all going to go away. You can't take it with you. We sell all this stuff, but we don't do it. So again, if it's a no-brainer, there's a lot of us with no brains. Put your hope in God. Put your hope in God. Not in your income. Not in your retirement. If anything, these past year and a half, we've seen that retirement can just evaporate, can it? Not in your credit cards, not in anything you're getting from the government, certainly not in the lottery, and not in anything you're going to inherit. Don't put your hope in these things. Have all those things. Great, super, all that stuff coming in doesn't make any difference. You have no hope in it whatsoever. Your hope is in God. You must be able to say, listen to me, you must be able to say with all honesty, we are going to make it because God is with us. We're going to make it because God has promised to take care of His own. We're going to make it, we're going to be fine because God is providing for us. Not because I've got money. Not because my check account is in the black. We're going to make it, we're going to be fine because God, we are dependent upon God, and God will not forsake us. You must be able to say that. You must be able to say we're going to make it because, not because of what we have, but because of who has us. You must be able to say that. You must be able to say that. And if you can't say that, then you're going to have money and you're going to be unhappy with it. It's going to cause you trouble. It's going to wreck your home. It's going to wreck your family, your marriage, your situation. You're going to wind up doing stupid stuff for the sake of it, and you're going to regret it. Don't go there. Put your hope in God, number one. Number one way to stop the love of money and its consequences from wrecking your life. Number two, he gives us in the next verse. Next, we have number two and number three in the next two verses. Again, command, he says, them to do good, to be rich in good deeds. That's the second thing. Be rich in good works. Do good and be rich in good works. You've got to have a plan. Every single person has a plan in this room how to make money, don't you? Sure you do. You should. You're going to have to live on it. You need to have a plan how to make money, how to have a job, how to have an income. You have a family. You have people to take care of. You have yourself to take care of. You need to have a plan. Do you have a plan to do good, though? Do you have a plan to do good for people, to be rich in good deeds? Do you have a plan? Do you have a list, for instance? And here's a suggestion to you. Do you have a list of those who you plan to visit, who you plan to call, who you plan to help? Sit down and make that list. Who needs an encouragement? Who needs help? Who needs food? Who needs care? Who needs money? That's taking what you've got and using it for a good thing. Be rich in good deeds. Again, if you want to know the secret of having money and being happy at the same time, here's the point too. Be rich in good deeds. Have a plan. Work at that plan. Make it work. And then if you do, you can have money and be happy at the same time. It's amazing. Then the third thing Paul says here as he continues, command them to be good and to be rich in good deeds, and to be generous and willing to share. There's the third thing. Be generous and willing to share. Number three, and maybe the biggest or equal to the biggest in this list. If you want to be cured of the love of money, learn to give it away. Learn to give it away. And this is not a sermon, and this is not a point about giving to the church, although you should give to your church, wherever it is. If you're not giving to your church, then why are you going to that church, is my question. If it ain't worth your money, then why go? Learn to give your money away. Surest indication of your love level towards money is your ability to give it away. Can you do it? Can you do it with no strings attached? Can you give? Remember what Jesus said? It's more blessed to give than receive. You know how blessed it is to receive? Feels good, doesn't it? Wow, you just get a bonus for $10,000. Doesn't that feel good? I tell you, man, it feels good. Woo! Let's go somewhere. Let's do something, right? It's more blessed, listen, to give than receive. As good as it feels to get, it feels better to give. That's what Jesus said. You can feel okay to get. Not near as good as you're going to feel to give. Again, secret to happiness. Take your money and make yourself happy with it. Not accumulating it, not hoarding it. You're going to get sick. People are going to be sick of you. Learn to give it away, and you're going to be happy with it. Learn to give your money away. It's a key principle to curing money love, and it's spoken of many times in the Scriptures. Let me show you one place. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 28, Paul speaking about those who are recently converted there in the Ephesian church. He who has been stealing must steal no longer. That's pretty straightforward, right? But must work, notice, doing something useful with his own hands, that he may have something to share with those in need. Notice the principle he sets up here. You stop taking stuff, you start earning a legitimate wage, and you start taking some of that money and giving it away. Why do people steal stuff? Because they love money. That's why. They love your stuff, and so when you're not home, they come and get it. Because it's easy, and it's free, and they don't have to work at it. Paul says, stop doing that. Get a legitimate job, but don't just accumulate money. Learn to give it away. It will cure you of money love. It will cure you of money love. Learn to give it away. Should you give it all away? I don't know. Ask the Lord. Should you give a percentage away? Should you give this much away? Should you say this much over what I expected to make I'm going to give? I don't know. It's between you and God, but learn to give some of it away. Learn to do it. You're going to get sick if you don't. There was a young man back east who by the age of 23 found himself a millionaire. Little luck, primarily super smart business sense, and this man was a millionaire at the age of 23, inherited none of it, made all of it. He was a legitimate millionaire at the age of 23. By the time he was 50 years old, he was not a millionaire, he was a billionaire. By the time he was 50, he found himself to be the first recorded billionaire on the planet Earth, this man. 50 years old. By the time he was 50, because his focus had been on money, at that point, every decision, every attitude, every relationship he was involved in, all had the purpose of creating personal power and wealth. Everything was focused on wealth. Everything was focused on money. So at the age of 50, he became a billionaire. He was very successful, extremely intelligent, very smart with regards to business. And yet, 3 years later, after being declared a billionaire, he fell deathly ill. No one knew what was wrong with him. Hair was falling out. He was losing weight by the pound on a regular basis. He was racked with pain. He had insomnia. He couldn't sleep. He had all kinds of health problems, all kinds of issues. They could deal with the peripheral issues, the symptoms, if you will, but they couldn't stop the disease. And they had no idea what it was. I mean, the man had $1 billion. He had personal physicians. No one knew what it was. No one knew what his problem was, but all they could tell him was at the rate he was getting sicker and at the rate that he was losing weight, that he would not live through the year. And so they just waited. He just waited. Night after night with no sleep, day after day with not getting better, only getting worse. And he finally decided that what the doctors were telling him was absolutely true. He sobered to the situation. He realized, among other things, that he was not going to take all these billions with him, and so he began to devise a strategic plan so that by the time he was dead, all of his money would be given away to places where he wanted it to go. This man began to take his money, and he began to channel it into assets such as hospitals and research with regards to medicine, channel it into mission work, this man did. On the day in which he had this revelation that he was not going to take it with him and that he was going to pass away, he set up a foundation which to this day carries his namesake, the John D. Rockefeller Foundation. John D. Rockefeller established this foundation which through, among other things, discovered a cure for penicillin because of his investment. Cures for vaccines for such things as malaria and tuberculosis and diphtheria, among many other things. But the most amazing part of the story of John D. Rockefeller wasn't just the fact that he gave his money away, learned to give his money away, which he had never done before. He'd only accumulated and never given. The most amazing part of his story that John was declared at 53 to not make it through the end of the year, he began to get better. As soon as he started giving money away, he began to get better. And as much as they could not explain why he was sick, they couldn't explain why he was getting better, but all they knew that he was, and he continued with this attitude through the rest of his life. He was predicted to die at 53. He died at 98. What was the principle? How many people have their speculations? Here's mine. God created us in His image. Part of His image, part of His nature, in fact, the very deepest part of His nature, is to get, not to get. Why did He create us to begin with? So He could get something from us? No. So He could give love to us. And then when we fell from that nature, when we fell from that principle, what did He do? He continued to give, didn't He? He gave us the most precious thing He had, His Son Jesus Christ. It's His nature. It's within our nature still, even as fallen as we are. It's within our nature to be givers, not takers. To be like God. You want to be like Him? You want to be happy? Listen, learn to give. Learn to give. Learn to handle your money correctly. Learn to give it away. Learn to have a plan to make money, sure, but be rich in good works. Put your focus and your hope on God, who will not evaporate. Let's pray together.